This is Two Dope Boys in a Podcast. I'm Michael Brooks.
I'm Phil McKenzie.
And this is a very special episode of Two Dope Boys, taking us into 2017. This is the predictions episode. We've gotten together some of the best people that we know, including some of the members of our crew, some of our former guests, some people you've actually never heard from before, and they're giving you basically, like, what did you say, Phil? Like, 1 minute predictions?
Yeah, it's a provocative idea, thought, or concept about something that's going to be important in 2017.
Yeah, so they're going to be giving, kind of a roadmap. It's really a distilled version of what we do week in and week out on the show, in terms of, you know, what we're always looking at: culture, trends, business, politics, society, where things are going and why. And here's the order that we have for this episode. Phil and I are going to go first. And then we got Rob Fields, Young Kim, who's a member of our crew and also at Madbury Club, Biz Gormley, and then we got Grant McCracken.
Tia Cancera, she's a director at Cancera Hackney.
And then we have, I'm sorry, I can't read this. This is Husham Humza.
Dowshan.
Sorry about that. And then we got Dowshan Humza and Mark Bowles, Lee Sean Hyung, and Lena Srirastava. I know that I've butchered some of those names, and I apologize. I just want to say also that Grant McCracken, of course, is the author of Dark Value and Chief Culture Officer. This is going to kind of get the thoughts going for 2017. And then on Tuesday, we will be back with our regularly scheduled programming for Two Dope Boys and a Podcast. Now let's get to the predictions.
My 2017 prediction, though I'm sometimes a little loath to use the term, so I'll say provocation, is going to be around what I'm terming or calling the reclamation of language. Now that we're facing pretty challenging times, I think, both socially and politically, I think language is going to become more and more important, actually parsing down to literally what words really mean so you can get to the heart of information. I think these past few years, we've seen a lot of co-option of language. Terms that would otherwise be very meaningful have actually been devalued because they've been attached to behaviors that haven't been consistent with their meaning. Even something like hope and change with the Obama administrations, a lot of people felt let down by those administrations, whether rightfully or wrongfully. So now anyone talking about things like hope and change become less meaningful. Mindfulness and wellness, the sharing economy, things that we talk about a lot on our show are things that around language and the use of language. And I think we have to really parse what we're saying. But on the flip side of that, and this is also a piece about that reclamation, is the more we understand language, the more we put ourselves in a situation to be understanding of context, I think we'll hopefully dial back on the outrage machine that drives so much of our interactions with one another, our ability to reach out to one another, our ability to work collectively. You know, we wrote a piece about this in part, you know, how not to be PC, but also how not to be a dick. And though that's a not a very eloquent way of putting it, that outrage machine drives us to extremes. And we want to be cognizant of that, that if we're going to find common ground, if we're going to find ways to connect with one another, build coalition, build movement, there has to be a dial back on that sensitivity and that need to leap to condemn the minute people say something that might have been taken out of context or as a context that we're uncomfortable with. So all of that is framed by this looking at an appreciation of language.
My prediction for 2017, and unlike Phil, I say this with complete certitude, that this will happen. No, I'm just kidding. But something that I do think that we will see in 2017 is a rise of counterculture and a opt out. And what I mean by opt out is I think many people are going to be looking to leave systems behind that don't work for them, whether it's wanting to deal with different types of financial institutions, thinking about how their communities and local spaces are governed, thinking about how they want to relate to technology. I think that part of the sort of broad political currents that we're experiencing, as exemplified by the crisis that we're about to face in terms of administration and the threats to civil liberties, environment, the economy, and basic institutional functioning, is going to spread out into many other areas that people think about how they make cultural, financial, and technological decisions. So we're going to see lots of different types of activism, and we're going to see a lot of different types of opportunities for certain types of businesses and brands, if they're willing to meet people in these new desires. But I do think that there will be an opt-out. I think that as the sort of extremeness of institutional disrespect and even kleptocracy that we'll see at the top of governance in this country, more and more people are going to ask themselves, well, then why am I wedded to, as an example, financial institutions that still pose risks to the economy? Or why am I still, you know, working to pay off debts that I'll probably never be able to pay off? What are the kind of alternative means here? How can I relate to technology differently? I think people are going to be wanting to make much more sort of coherent and cohesive decision making, from their purchasing power to their engagement in civics and into their also, in fact, kind of experimentation with alternative forms of economy, alternative community building. And I think we'll kind of see some sort of resurgence of that type of activity in 2017 moving forward. And it's a big opportunity for organizations that can meet those needs in a respectful, transparent, and connected way.
And my prediction is that 2017 will be the year of the fast forward, or the year that real-time playback realized that it was actually under threat. Everybody talks about how fast news is coming in and how many shows they have to watch on Netflix and such, and I think those are problems that aren't going to get better. I think they're probably going to get worse. And everyone who listens to this show and the Majority Report knows that I listen to audiobooks and podcasts sped up, and I think everybody should. But I also think you're going to start to see more and more of this encroach on, say, people want to catch up with a certain TV show or a certain this or that. I think that this is the year that that sort of becomes mainstream.
Great. So we started out the gate with our three predictions. We have many more for you, and we're going to get to it now with Mr. Rob Fields. Of course, he is a crew member, strategist, and writer. We'll see you all on Tuesday.
Hey, this is Rob Fields, curator, marketer, and part of the Two Dope Boys podcast crew. As I look ahead to 2017, one of the trends that I think that a lot of brands are going to have to come to terms with is pessimism. And by that, I mean there has been a shift. I wrote about this, I think, back in August. We tended to have this outlook where we, and I use the term we very broadly, everyone seemed to think that the future was going to be better in some way, shape, or form. You know, at least, and at the very least, if it's not good for me, then I know my kids will be all right. They're going to do better. They're going to have some opportunities, blah, blah, blah. But lately, we've seen a shift in that. And now the story we tell ourselves, and this is certainly what has kind of fueled Brexit, it fueled the rise and the ascendancy of Trump, was the sense that the future is not something to look forward to, but actually it's something to be feared, and that people therefore would rather retreat into some past that they imagine was safer. And this is a problem. When people broadly or when enough people begin to think that the future is not something we should be running towards, that what we need to do is seek safety in some kind of imagined past. And I really wonder if, you know, the role of brands, particularly given the political landscape of potential authoritarianism, of potential autocracy that is going to be happening here in the United States, the role that brands are going to need to play to, one, remind us of the things that unite us, the things that help us think of our decency. I think of the things that, for example, Kellogg and a whole host of brands who decided, no, you know what, we're actually not going to be advertising on Breitbart sites. You know, I think of brands like that can help restore a sense of community and maybe even getting outside of our own bubble. I think of, like, it's a great time, I think, to be a Habitat for Humanity or someone like that, that's actually out doing the work of, you know, connecting people and helping people to feel a little less isolated. I'm bracing for a year or maybe four where it is generally pessimistic, and, you know, trying to figure out ways that we can still motivate people to remember what they value and remember how to reach out and connect to those wells of decency that we remember and that we heretofore had been trying to instill in our children and that had been instilled in us. So unfortunately, the trend for 2017, I think, will be pessimism.
Hey, what's up, guys? So this is my prediction for music in 2017. Hua Su wrote a short piece for The New Yorker right after the elections, and he was lamenting on the protest music of the past year compared to protest music from different eras. And this last sentence stuck with me. Quote, "The problem for me was that a lot of this music tended toward compassion and civility, giving the other side the benefit of the doubt, hopeful that the truth will set them free." And really, you could say that about more than just the music, right? But also of the left. But anyways, so I started looking at the music that came out in the past year that reflected some of the angst, frustrations, and overall wokeness of a big part of society. Obviously, I didn't catch everything that came out, especially some of the more underground artists who tend to be historically more militant in their messaging. And I focused on urban music because that's what I like. So you could make an argument that it started at the end of 2014 with D'Angelo's Black Messiah, which came out around the time of the Ferguson uprising. Then a few months later, we had Kendrick Lamar with To Pimp a Butterfly. And for those who wanted artists to speak up on societal issues, it provided a glimmer of hope. And we wondered if it would be a trend that would continue into 2016. I'm just going to run down a list of music last year that reflected similar themes. In February, during the Super Bowl, Beyoncé performs Formation. Got a whole bunch of people upset with this Black Panther-like imagery. All of a sudden, it was considered anti-police. SNL had a great skit that showed her white fans losing their shit to it. In the same month, we had Kanye West, The Life of Pablo. Now, I'm not talking about Kanye now, but Kanye then. And this album had a lot of elements of spirituality that dealt with hopes and fears and reflected some of what was happening in society, some of the feelings that was happening, captured some of the feelings that were happening in society. Then in May, Chance the Rapper's Coloring Book. It's also spiritual, but more uplifting and hopeful in the content, a very gospel sound. In June, you had Blood Orange, dropped Sandra Bland, the single and the video. And just from the title, you should know what that was about. And it's as if the Knoll sisters decided to bookend the year, and Solange drops A Seat at the Table towards the end of the year, where almost every song deals with how she deals with society's ills and how it affects her. Just off song titles, you know what she's talking about. Don't Touch My Hair, Weary, Mad. The videos were amazing. It really, I think that album, more than any other album, really gave people a sense of peace and felt like, oh, someone's speaking for me. And in December, Childish Gambino dropped Awaken My Love, and I mean, this guy just keeps shifting people's perceptions of him, right? That's like a slow, funky, messy 70s throwback with songs like Riot, Stand Tall, and Boogeyman. And even some of the older artists got in the mix, Common, John Legend, and the surprise reunion album from the legendary Tribe Called Quest all had albums and music that, you know, was talking about what's happening outside and what's happening that dealt with oppression and dealt with a lot of the issues that people felt like artists were not talking about just a few years ago. So now we're about to live through the Trump regime. Well, what kind of music came out during other oppressive regime times in our country? That's the first thing I thought about. So I'm thinking music from my era, Public Enemy, Boogie Down Productions, NWA, Queen Latifah, Tribe, Brand Nubian, Self-Destruction, We're All in the Same Gang, Rage Against the Machine. These all came out between 1989 and 1993, which is when Bush Sr. was at the helm. And if you go further back, Curtis Mayfield, Gil Scott-Heron's The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, Sly and the Family Stones, There's a Riot Going On, Marvin Gaye's What's Going On, Stevie Wonder Gets More Conscious with Talking Book and Inner Visions, Aretha Franklin's Young, Gifted, and Black, and those years, 1969 to 1973. Who's in the White House? Nixon. So when Trump was elected, I saw a few people tweeting that the music was about to get more militant, and it got me thinking, like, okay, is that going to be the case? And like, what's the historical relevance of it? What's the pattern? And I really hope that is true. You know, I'm predicting, but perhaps I'm more hoping that music will become angrier and more urgent. You know, when I was younger, I really believed that I could fight the power and change the world because of Public Enemy. And I think today's artists, especially urban music artists, as history has shown, are capable and are willing and will sound the alarm in 2017.
Happy New Year. Happy 2017 to everyone. This is Biz Gormley, member of the Two Dope Boys and a podcast crew. You can find me on Twitter. Check me out there as One Witness, O-N-E-W-I-T-N-E-S-S. My predictions for 2017 really rest on the heavy ashes of 2016. It's been a year, of course, when we lost many cultural beacons, and a year when the American brand of fascism rose in the ranks to the highest places in state power, now sitting amongst other similar players in countries across the globe. I think many share my sentiments that these have been great hardships, and many other things I haven't even listed are included in those hardships. But really looking forward, I think we only have a few choices. The stakes are higher for people, for business, for any sort of brand. So before I dig into my predictions for 2017, I do just want to pause quickly and say, amidst those sad reflections or treacherous reflections of the year past, I also look back and see myself and many I know reflecting on great growth, personal growth, business growth, having reached new levels of creativity, movement growth, new members, new power, new connection around issues and values and potential that we all want to realize. So no matter what terror reigns or which horrors come, I want us to all remember that we can create and embrace beautifully and powerfully, and I hope that we will in the year ahead. For brands and culture, I predict a deepening of purpose in 2017. In the U.S. this year, we have seen people cling mightily to story in the face of facts, and yet in 2017, there will be no more room for the traditional frame of heroic stories that the United States has built itself upon. Unless you are a brand that serves fascists or the financially rich, your people, also known as your engine for existence, will be facing disappointment at best. No matter who they voted for, folks are going to be disappointed by the world we are living in this coming year, I anticipate. Many will have their existence threatened. Many will be striving just to survive. But many will also be getting creative and connecting and finding each other and finding their voice in a new time when heroes to save them no longer are who they look to. So the stakes are high. And no matter how high they were before, there's great opportunity in that, and there is a real call to action. Brands are going to need to reconsider why they exist. They're going to need to return to their missions and find the space between their words and action, readjust for higher impact, for higher connection. And whether we are talking about tech corporations, philanthropies, community organizations, local governments, or grocery stores, this is true. There will be a choice to participate in the fascist narrative or to create a separate narrative in their own, in opposition, distance, or resistance. So the stories that get told will need to be rooted in that deeper purpose. Those that will be most successfully shared are also going to need to be honest about what is real in this new time. Those stories are going to need to meet the higher standard of the oldest trick in the book, word of mouth. I don't think scale or SEO or tricky models that we can all turn around and use quickly are going to have as much potential as the human connection and the human endorsement that comes from really meeting a standard that maps to someone's values. My hope is that the stories that are shared, the stories that are told, will also embrace what remains when false hopes of heroism fall. My hope is these stories will embrace people and community and complexity and collectivism in new ways, contributing meaningfully through decentralized nodes of humanity. So may you survive and thrive and contribute great things. There is much work ahead. I hope we can join in it. Happy New Year. May the new year bring you deeper and more lovingly into your power, and may it offer beauty and joy, health and wealth, lessons and growth to you. Peace and light.
Mic check 1 2 1 2. This is Georgette Pierre, and fellas, thanks for having me. Happy New Year to you all. Getting straight into my 2017 predictions, three main things I'm thinking about. The first one is revolved around the political climate. With Trump being in office, I think there's going to be a huge unified front with people rallying together to fight against the bigotry and the racism, discrimination, everything that's been happening since that has been perpetuated around Trump's campaign and him being elected into office. So I think it's the year of self-care. A lot of people are going to be taking care of themselves and really looking out for others. And I think that's going to be a sight to see. The country will surprise us in more ways than one in a good way. And I look forward to seeing that and being a part of that. The second thing is music. I think it's the year of music. Yes, every year we say that, but something's just been brewing. I really gotten into looking and finding obscure artists. And I think we've been allowed to do that with the various streaming services. But most importantly, the artists directly feeding us the music straight to the fans. No middleman, cutting the middleman out. I think you'll still continue to see a lot of that happening, you know, going through the non-traditional routes. I think recording artists will continue to find ways to communicate and be in touch with their fans directly. And I think vinyl might have a small comeback. I mean, I've been listening to it as of late with a friend. So, you know, I think it might have a small comeback, you know, as more of a collectible items and just wanting to do things a little bit differently, right? You know, we like to consume our music and our content differently. And I think, you know, I think people are going to be a little bit more free in that sense. And so, especially for us audiophiles, we love to hear every sound anyways, and vinyls are perfect for that. And lastly, I think you'll see us millennials really showing our ass this year in a great way. I mean, I know they always say us millennials are worried about, you know, surface level things, and we don't really care about deeper things or important things. And I think that's not true. I think you'll see a lot more things popping up this year, whether it's in the form of content being produced that we're consuming, a new app, website. I think you'll see a lot of people looking to make a difference in a phenomenal way. I mean, the difference with millennials and other generations, we just like to do shit differently. And it's usually non-traditional. So I think you'll see a lot of that. More content that makes a difference in the form of whether it's social entrepreneurship or philanthropy. You'll definitely see that. And I'm part of that. So I look forward to sharing some amazing things with you all this year. And then Two Dope Boys turning up and even getting and becoming bigger and more badass than they were in 2016. So find me, georgettepierre.com, and on Twitter, at Georgette. Peace.
My prediction for the coming year is that we will find ourselves by the middle of the year in the throes of, or certainly at least by the end of the year, in the throes of an outbreak of conspicuous consumption. My more particular argument is that people will begin to spend in a big and aggressive and dramatic and self-advertising kind of way. So that's the prediction. And let me sort of, if I have time to do so, let me say that I think, I mean, you know, everyone's shell-shocked as a result of the outcome of the presidential election. But what I want to do is just kind of push the conversation beyond that and say that I think there's a good chance that we'll see the economy ignite to some extent, that there'll be creation of new jobs and new wealth. And I wonder, and it just seems to me possible, that we'll see people spend that new wealth in a more conspicuous way. The last time we have had a spending spree of this kind was in the 1950s. And I recently did a piece for a Medium about comparing that spending spree in the 1950s, living large in the 1950s, and the present day. So that's my prediction.
2017 future.
I think that 2017 is a very special year. And the reason that I believe that is because not just Mr. Trump being in a presidential role, but actually it's to carry on from the thought of the podcast, and that was that dialogue is our first point of communicating with one another, and that that dialogue allows us to open the space in between, that discomfort of the space in between, to open up the conversations with people that we feel uncomfortable with, that can allow us to bring ourselves closer to one another. And I think that's what 2017 is about, allowing for the discomfort.
Hi, this is Daoshan Hunza. I'm a proud Londoner, British, and of course international. Professionally, I'm a digital and business transformation director, known for delivering increased revenues, innovations, and a range of industry firsts. Two of my passions are championing access to opportunity for those from less privileged circumstances, and advocating what I call diversity of poets as a business imperative. POETS being my acronym for perspective, outlook, experience, thought, sector, and social background. Many thanks to Two Dope Boys and a Podcast for inviting me to be part of their show for what is going to be relevant in 2017 and what I feel may shape our changing world. I wish them and all the listeners a happy new year. The themes I want to address are those of change and difference. 2016 was a year of great change across political, cultural, economic, and societal aspects. Much of this has been amplified by continuous mass media coverage and incessant connectivity, commentary, and sharing via social media. In the words of Bob Dylan, the Nobel Prize winner for Literature in 2016, "The times, they are a-changing." And so it continues. The world economic centre of gravity continues its shift from west to east. In 1980, it sat in the Atlantic Ocean, somewhere between USA and Europe. Currently, it is in Central Asia, and will continue its relentless journey following the Silk Route to be in central China by 2050. In addition, new economic forces are being unleashed from previously marginalised communities. The largest, of course, being women. Women, even here in the West, are still fighting for basic rights and to achieve equality with men. With increased opportunity, women are achieving great academic and professional success and are progressing based on merit, making even greater contributions to our nation. Equally, other minority groups and immigrant communities are making significant strides forward, strengthening their nation, and in many cases, their new home nation. However, 2016 is likely to be remembered for the significant political events. For us, here in the UK, the referendum vote for the UK to exit the European Union, otherwise known as Brexit. and more internationally, the US presidential election of Donald Trump. Among other things, these events have brought valuing difference and ensuring inclusion to the fore. Uncertainty and distrust must not derail our focus from driving inclusion and bringing people together. The potency and pervasiveness of the media, both traditional and online, has made people more sensitive to difference. I was reminded of a quote that the media does not necessarily tell us what to think, but the media does tell us what to think about. This all leads to the increasing challenges around how people from different backgrounds, ethnicities, socioeconomic groups, generations, faiths, and even genders and sexualities relate to one another as friends, neighbours, colleagues, and citizens. In a world dominated by algorithms, media coverage and political changes have shown the power of emotion to mobilise and challenge the status quo. We need to move away from the impact of emotional polarisation and division towards engagement, inclusion and integration. To aid this, we must remember that these are two-way streets requiring understanding and reciprocity, and we must strive towards true equality for all, fair access to opportunity and economic empowerment. As a result for 2017, we must build a narrative for inclusion that is more powerful, uplifting, simple and emotionally resonant. Dare I say it, similar to the way that the alt-right have mobilised their masses. But we need to do it with integrity, authenticity and embracing diversity or difference of poets. Thank you.
Many thanks to my brothers in arms at Two Dope Boys and congrats on their achievements in getting picked up by NPR One. In a word, dope. As for 2017, prophetic small things happened on Election Day in unexpected places and continue to happen, from the likes of Ilhan Omar to Tammy Duckworth. Take a moment and listen to Reverend Barber of North Carolina. He's building a powerful movement and is the closest thing to a Dr. King or Whitney Young we have right now. Large luxury brands such as Ralph Lauren are basically dead, even if they don't know it. Instagram is now a treasure trove for curating your own personal brand, which just happens to be attached to a shopping mall. Business will surprise us. Hate is not good for business. Truth will be revealed, and love does live here.
My name is Li Shan Huang. I am a designer and an educator. I co-founded FUSA, which is a consultancy that works with diverse communities to tell their stories and to design the future together. My prediction, and in some ways volition for 2017, is that 2017 be the year of cities. I know cities aren't new, people have been talking about cities for a long time, but thinking about how sanctuary cities is very much something being talked about right now, coming out of a contentious national election. How do we refocus on the local? And I mean more than just sanctuary cities and immigration, but really focusing on the peer-to-peer, the people in our geographic communities, right? Social media has been great at connecting people all around the world based on similar interests, but how do we refocus on the people that we share space with? And whether it's design interventions, policy interventions, advocacy, I think that's my hope and my prediction for 2017, that we focus on that local level.
This is Lena Srivastava, founder of CL, the Creative Impact and Experience Lab. My predictions for 2017 are really more like reflections or hopes. As I look around at the world, it's December 31st, 2016 right now, and 2016 has been, as everyone has said, a very, very difficult year globally. And I can't remember a time in my lifetime when I've felt that our world order is sort of more fragile. And I think as we enter 2017, we are going to be seeing a lot more tensions. The refugee crisis, I think, is going to continue to be an increasing issue around the world. Climate change and the rise of fascism and authoritarianism are things that we're going to have to look at. Domestically, I think it's going to continue to be healthcare and education and racial tensions. And in the face of that, my hopes are that we understand that we have to invest in self-organized networks and sort of these loosely based affiliations that I've seen coming about since the U.S. election. They've been around for a long time. Like I think about Black Lives Matter or what's happening at Standing Rock. And these are self-organized networks. And I really feel like we need to be paying attention to these, investing more in these, and organizing them ourselves. And I've seen that happening. So I'm pretty hopeful about that. There are going to be sort of tensions over competing narratives as there have been leading up to where we are in 2016. But I feel like communities of color particularly will increasingly network themselves globally. And it feels like there's going to be almost like there's going to be less revolution, but more rebellion and more protest, but really more organizing towards transformation. It's going to be community-based. And I think that those of us who work in technology and media or philanthropy need to be paying attention to that. We need to support this. So we're going to be looking at platforms and social networks and investment in these communities to be communicating together and broadcasting and organizing towards positive action. But I also think increasingly people are going to want to be strategic about using social media and technology. I think they're going to want face-to-face encounters a great deal more. So my hope for 2017 is that we, those of us who work in these fields, start networking each other and supporting activists and protesters and people who are working towards a social good, towards a common good in government and philanthropy, in all of these sectors, that we invest in these platforms, in technologies and communication technologies to support these efforts. And I think 2018 might look a little different, hopefully. Happy New Year.
As you asked me to share my thoughts on future scenarios for this year, I've decided to share the stuff that's been keeping me up lately. And I've split this into three main topics, which are kind of related to each other. The first one is the paradox of inclusion. As we've seen with Brexit and with last year's US election, there is a strong polarization of worldviews between the generations. And this also applies to Brazil's own generation Y and Z. We did a study with teenagers last year, which confirms this very clearly. And for young people, inclusion really is the new norm. And the younger the person, the less nuanced this perception is. The paradox is that those who do not agree that inclusion is the new norm are excluded. And the attempt to own the narrative by discrediting opposers, this has done no favors to the cause. This is perceived by the ones on the other side as authoritarian or dogmatic. And sometimes this forces people to hide their views and in order to avoid conflict or being ostracized. And I think there's plenty of evidence for this in recent election results and the big difference between polls and the actual outcome. The same thing happened in Brazil as well as in the US and in the UK. And I think one of the main problems with the authoritarian convert or die flavor of the 2010s breed of political correctness is that it alienates those who disagree and it makes opposers sound and feel like they're some kind of rebels, you know? And the rebel discourse, they might attract more young people to their cause. So we can either go for a momentary surge in conservatism that can sway some young people because it feels rebellious for them and regain some of the lost space over the years, or it can be a final flash, a final shout before older generations fade away. And as historically every conflict for civil rights ended as a victory for progress, and I'm thinking mainly here about the end of slavery, universal suffrage, and so on, probably the progressives are going to win this one as well, but maybe it should take longer than expected. The second big theme I wanted to talk to you about is acknowledging confirmation bias. This second issue is closely related to the first and further amplified as more of our media consumption moves towards digital and all that comes with it, algorithm-based recommendations and the switch to mobile as well, which is basically means bite size and more superficial information. And the problem with algorithm-generated bubbles and resulting confirmation bias evidently goes far beyond politics. It affects how we pick our music, our entertainment, and our news sources. And this has a dramatic effect on how artists are built. And as this issue moves from PR, strategy, and humanity circles into the mainstream, I think many people will try to broaden their cultural and political affinities beyond their comfort zone as they become aware of how current algorithms are designed to serve them more of the same with little room for broadening or for real serendipity. And the problem is that having a broader repertoire takes time and effort, so I think besides going for the already dominant curation approach, educational and introductory approaches like a version of everything for dummies or for newbies, new entrances into tastes, into references, etc., can be a direction with good potential in order to make that process of getting to know new stuff more palatable and more efficient, which looks like this can be achieved by a better combination of human plus machine curation and with further advances in artificial intelligence. And I think if there's enough demand, the point will certainly tip. The third issue I'd like to talk to you about is about brands, and it goes to two main directions, to less fluff and more facts, and to taking sides going more and more mainstream. I know this is something that's in the US it has been more common, especially in terms of politics, brands and companies taking sides on civil rights issues, on political things, but in Brazil it's not as common, but it's getting more common over here as well. As spin, false news and confirmation bias influence networks gain strength, even though this might sound a bit counterintuitive now, this should give rise to simpler evidence and fact-based discourse, at least in the world of marketing and brands. Or Rice, the marketing thinker, once said that if you're in the second place, you must not copy the leader, rather you must do the exact opposite. And I think this way of thinking applies here. If the dominant strategy is to make events and information into spin and persuasion, standing out in this context, in this scenario, requires transparency, clarity, and facts. And this rising way of thinking is easier to spot in advertising and communication because there's more room for trial and error than on products themselves. And I bring you two local examples here. BR Foods, the Brazilian frozen food giant, which is an international brand. They're in several different markets, but they're brand known for their Sadia brand. They have switched their historical family-centered an emotional tone to a more rational, educational, rational, in order to promote their recent partnership with Jamie Oliver, which included programs on food education for public and private schools and changes done to their supply chain, meaning they're switching stuff around in the back end of things as well, besides on the communication front, and they're using advertising and they're using new product lines to educate consumers about best practices in terms of sustainability, about healthier eating, about cooking at home, and etc. There's also the example of Skol, which is one of the major local beer brands, which is owned by AB InBev, and they have radically changed their discourse from one carnival campaign to the next after lots of public backlash. The 2015 campaign featured something in the lines of "Do not take no for an answer" in the context of flirting, which was obviously understood by feminists and parts of the general public as an incitation towards abuse and rape. And as you know, in terms of flirting and hooking up, carnival here is spring break, Mardi Gras, and then some. And last year's campaign, after this backlash, last year's campaign changed the message into moving on if the other party is not interested and keep having fun anyway. And their newest ad, the ad for this year, is about being body positive in beach season, which is absolutely a first for a Brazilian beach brand. They paid a high price for their initial lack of cultural sensibility and being out of touch with the zeitgeist, which is something that even Grant McCracken has mentioned, that being out of touch with culture is now more expensive than ever. I'd say that's about it.